Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together. Okay, Brian, how are you today?
Ian, thank you so much for having me. I'm great.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to have you here. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while, actually. You know, we've known each other a couple of years, but I think it's been a while since we chatted.
I think officially I've known you for 4 or 5 years, actually.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we're going to get...
You're early at Microsoft for me, yeah.
I know, right? We're going to get into that deep, dark history where we met. But first, I think maybe I'll introduce you to our listeners. I am just really excited today to welcome Brian Bell, Managing Partner at Team Ignite Ventures. Now, Team Ignite, I'm going to let Brian explain a bit, but it's a dedicated group of experts, extensive backgrounds in startup and technology that is investing kind of across the B2B space, as I understand it.
That's right. Yep.
Now, Brian's also been an operator helping scale 3 AI startups, generating over $300 million in revenue. He's led the AI category, which is extra hot these days, at AWS. And I met him at Microsoft, where he was leading the marketplace category team, scaling more than 250 startups on the Azure marketplace.
Sounds all really impressive, but it felt like a lot of failure along the way.
Oh, good. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, it does sound impressive, and it is impressive. But let's, you know, there's always a fun story, right, behind the bullet points in the paper. So you are leading a syndicate. You are running a fund. You are investing. So can we talk a little bit about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, start from the beginning. Like, give you my intro.
Yeah, let's do it.
Originally from Seattle. Family's Canadian, like yourself. That's what we have in common there. I switched majors from history to finance. I figured I wanted to get something more practical.
Yeah.
Worked really hard, got to Wall Street, did the CFA, all that stuff, and quickly washed out and became disillusioned with my entire life at that point. Tried to figure out what I'd do if I won the lottery or had 10 or 20 million in the bank, whatever the number is for you. Couldn't figure it out. And so I, you know, in the next 15 years of my career, I just meandered through job after job trying to figure out, gosh, what would I do if I didn't have to work? Traveled the world, lived in lots of different countries, lots of different places, worked at just about every job you can work at every kind of company, had a small business, had a couple failed to launch startups, found my way into tech. And my first job in tech was in South Park in San Francisco, sharing an office with a little company called Instagram. We're both backed by the same VC.
Little place.
Yeah. We're in the old Twitter building at the south end of South Park. And we see them get acquired for $1 billion, and our startup is really failing. It's just a real like eye-opener for me. And yeah, I just worked at a bunch of tech companies. I started in sales and marketing, moved to product and BD. I've done finance, operations, accounting. I've done everything. Makes me a great investor, but kind of unemployable. You know, found my way into a unicorn called Rocket Fuel way in over my head. We had 30 PhDs on staff building big data AI systems for ad tech,
amazing,
optimizing, selling you pizzas online. And we did a really good job of that. And I just built a bunch of AI powered products over the years, culminating with leading the AI category at AWS and then eventually to Microsoft, as you described. Along the way, I realized after scaling hundreds of startups at these big tech companies, I was having more fun talking to founders. And so I started investing on the side as an angel and an LP in funds. I helped a friend of mine raise some money for his fund, make a bunch of syndicated investments. And then, like, gosh, this is really fun. I'll go get a job in venture. I have an MBA from Berkeley, right? Somebody will give me a job in venture. Now I have all this experience. And after a few months of, you know, just talking to GPs, I was like, this isn't going to happen. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just so scatterbrained and, you know, have so much varied experience, they couldn't see it. And so I just, you know, I knew I could make good investment decisions because of all my experience. So I started Team Ignite. And the vision for Team Ignite, of course, was to ignite startups as a team. And it started with just, you know, a handful of people I knew in my network, right? Pulling capital and helping to scale startups, placing advisors and board members and stuff like that. And that scaled over time. We did 50 investments through the syndicate. We raised a little rolling fund on the side, and the rest is history. We've made 110 investments now and have a bunch of really great markups. And I feel like I found the thing that I would do if I won the lottery. You know, I would invest in startups. I do other things like play video games and guitar and all that, and travel and go hiking and long walks on the beach. But I would definitely invest in startups. So that's kind of my story.
Well, I love it. And it's interesting because it sounds like you had a little bit of a midlife crisis, except early in your
quarter
career.
Life. Yeah.
We call it the quarter life crisis. Yep. And that really kind of reset things for you.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up poor. Mom died when I was 16. Sad story, blah, blah, blah. And I think I was in my 20s, I was seeking security from that. Right.
Yeah.
And then when I started making a little money, I realized that, you know, money doesn't bring you happiness. You have to like find fulfillment. And so I did a lot of things. I did nonprofit stuff. I did sustainability stuff. I was in a meditation program, blah, blah, blah. Just everything you can think of trying to find, I don't know, happiness and fulfillment in my life. But I couldn't find anything I would do if I had 20 million in the bank. I literally couldn't. I guess I would just sit on the couch and play Xbox until I started investing in startups.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, I'd do this. I wouldn't work as hard at it as I do now, but I would still do it.
Well, and why is that? What is it about this work with startups that would get you off the beach, off the couch, away from Halo?
That's funny. I just played through all the Halo series again. So I still play video games a lot, as evidenced by my...
I still haven't played Infinite, and I'm kind of embarrassed about that.
It's good. It's good. You'll like it. They just got the campaign out finally. I think about what I'm interested in. You know, I'm very much a student of singularity theory, law of accelerating returns. I'm kind of a Trekkie. I'm a big time Trekkie, actually. I used to read the encyclopedia as a teenager, cover to cover, over and over again. So I used to know all the random facts about Star Trek. So I've always been a futurist, if that is a thing. I guess it is. And I love thinking about the future and being on the edge of what's possible. And being a venture capitalist is like being where the rubber meets the road with technology and business. It's like right there where things are just becoming possible. A big question you ask yourself as an investor is, why is it the right time for this, right? Why is this Instacart versus Webvan? Or
sure,
why can you do this now that you couldn't do it 5 or 10 years ago? And I think that's a really amazing question. And as VCs, you kind of wrestle with that every day over and over and over again, 500 deals a month that we're looking at and just trying to figure out, you know, what is it about this particular startup that's going to work now?
Yeah. Well, and so as I hear you talk, something that strikes me, I mean, okay, so you've got the Uber nerd thing going on, which is really important, right? And you've got, I think, that curiosity, but there's an optimism that's coming through here as well, right? You talk about the world of Star Trek. The world of Star Trek is a very optimistic take on the future.
Oh, yeah. Utopian.
And I think you have to have a certain amount of this optimism to be engaging with startups all the time. Can you kind of share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm a extreme optimist. I think everything will work out, especially kind of where I came from, you know, on free lunch programs and Section 8 housing. I'm a product of, you know, of like, I shouldn't have made it, right? I shouldn't have gone to college. I shouldn't have got an MBA. I shouldn't have done any of this stuff. And so, of course, I'm an optimist. Like, all it takes is putting your head down and doing some hard work, right? And so, yeah, I feel like I'm a techno-optimist for sure. You look at the history of humanity. I mean, 200 years ago, right, we're all working on farms, right? 100 years ago, we're all working at factories, or most of us. And now we're all just like creating podcasts, you know?
All content.
It's all content, all right? Time, it's all
yeah.
I mean, in the future, like AI is going to automate everything, and all we're left to do is talk to each other about what's cool.
You know, I mean, it seems to me, so now we're going to get into the EAC wave. I don't even know what to call it. Is it EACC, EAC, but the effective accelerationism, that whole idea, right, that actually seems to be really taking hold and spreading, that we should be incredibly optimistic about the future based on the technological innovation we're seeing.
Yeah.
And some of it's utterly terrifying, and you can go to a very dark place. But some of it is really inspirational. Is there something that you've seen recently that sort of acted as a reminder to you? Oh yeah, this is why I'm so excited.
Well, I mean, you and I are similar, right? Like in our 40s or whatever. And
I try not to tell people that, by the way.
Yeah, I know. They're like, really? You're 43? I'm like, yeah, it's a lot of green tea. But you know, we've lived it. right? Yeah. We went from cassette tapes. What was, you remember what your first cassette tape was?
Absolutely do. I'm not absolutely remotely ashamed to talk about who it was. No, I am. My first CD was Blues Traveler. My first cassette was, oh my God, I'm blanking, the British pop. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I had that on tape.
Spice Girls. Yeah.
Again, things you shouldn't admit on a podcast.
We've went through successive generations of technology that each got 2-3 10x better throughout our lifetime every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
We've been living exponentially for our entire lives.
And it's accelerating. It is exponential. It's accelerating. It's
accelerating, right? So like Kurzweil tells the story of, you know, like you have 64 squares on a chessboard. You heard this?
I don't think so. Tell me.
The inventor of chess, the story goes, in India or China, wherever it was, and he brings it to the emperor. The emperor is so impressed by this game of chess. This is incredible. I will give you whatever you want in the kingdom. You want my daughter, blah, blah, blah. You want to feast him. He goes, oh, all I want is a grain of rice doubled for every square on the board. And the emperor's like instantaneously goes, that's can't be a lot of rice. Go for it. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and what he didn't realize is like 32 doublings of rice is a billion grains. And then it keeps doubling. And then by the time you get to 64 doublings, it's more rice than the entire universe can possibly create in all the matter of the universe. So it's a huge number, right? And so if you look at technology, it's been doubling every 18 to 24 months for probably 32 to maybe 40 doublings. So we're now starting to get into some really crazy, weird doublings. And you asked like what has reminded me recently, it's definitely large language models, right? They came out of nowhere, but... Yeah. People watching the space saw this. It's not even a doubling. I wrote an article on this. It's more of a 10x increase every year or two. So it gets an order of magnitude because what they do is they take these models and they just keep scaling them. But they're not doubling them. They're 10xing them every year. And that's why all of a sudden you get these emergent properties that were unexpected from these models that are now disrupting everything.
I mean, speaking of unexpected emergent properties, I love the conversation that's going on around ChatGPT having gotten lazy, right? There's all this like, hey, we don't understand how this works. People are perceiving different outputs than they got a month ago. We don't understand how this works. But also, we have gotten so blasé about the unbelievable capabilities of this thing, right?
Yeah.
That now
becomes mundane right away. It can write for you. I mean, that's incredible. You can write anything. I use it for everything.
Well, the pace, you know, extrapolating. I mean, everybody in the world, of course, is talking about all things Gen AI. But if we look at where image generation has come in 12 months and we look at video generation happening right now, right? I don't know. I find this stuff unbelievably cool.
We're unlocking a whole different era, epoch of humanity where we're all creators. We're all empowered to create whatever we want, whenever we want. And everything will conform like Minority Report exactly to your specifications. You know, so like the movie will be your movie. It'll be Ian's movie. Yeah. And you'll be like, this is the most incredible movie. And I'll watch it and be like, this is not good. And you'll be like, what are you talking about? This is the best movie ever.
It's for me.
It's because the AI knows everything about you and conformed exactly to what you wanted to see at that moment.
Yep. There's a flip side of this, which is the sales tools are going to know everything about me as well. I don't think too much about that. So here's something interesting. I love this sense of wonder. I think we're in this industry, largely you and I, because of this sense of wonder. But things do become mundane quickly. How does that impact you as a person or even as an investor? Like the, you know.
Well, what's kind of scary is, you know, maybe being a VC doesn't even exist in 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Right? If AI is super intelligent and 99th percentile at all human tasks, increasingly, maybe my job doesn't even exist. Maybe a startup founder's job doesn't even exist in the future. Maybe it's just like the person on the couch talking to their AI to build stuff. And so we entered this new epoch where there is no capital allocation or resource scarcity needed, right? It's just whatever you want, whenever you want it. So maybe we're entering this world where there is no scarcity. There is no capital allocation needed, right? I mean, what does the world even look like when you can talk to AI and robots and it just goes and builds like nanobot swarms? It just goes and builds anything you want. It just manifests whatever you want. Or maybe we cease to become physical in nature. You know, Tesla's going to be rolling out millions of robots. Elon's 100% marching towards that future.
Yep.
Because he sees it as a radical unlock to making us interplanetary, which has been his whole mission for the last 25 years of his career. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that unknown is one of the things that a lot of people struggle with, right? Because we don't know. We see the potential. We see the exponential increase in technology. But we don't know what that means, I think, for us as decision makers and people. Yep, you're right. The VC job may well be done by a computer. Everybody's job may well be done by a computer, which kind of transforms a lot of people's purpose. But I think there's there's something really interesting right now that I personally haven't felt before in my career. And as you said, it spans a couple decades at this point. The level of uncertainty about what the next 5, 10, 20 years holds is higher for me than it's ever been.
Yeah. What you're describing is, I forget what the phenomenon is called, but you know how sci-fi timelines have compressed?
Yeah.
You know, 50 years ago, we were imagining 1,000 years in the future, and then Star Trek the 60s was 300 years in the future. And now we have trouble getting past like 5 or 10 years in the future because we're like, what does that even look like?
Yeah.
When there's generative AI and robots and genetic manipulation and information technology proliferating everywhere. And it's hard to even imagine.
I mean, it is hard to imagine, but there's a flip side, right? There's exponential advancement in some areas, and some areas that are grounded by physics as we understand them, right?
Yeah.
Are progressing apace. Hardware only moves so quickly. Energy, you know, maybe someone cracks fusion tomorrow. It seems like we're getting close, but you know, there's energy constraints. There are constraints out there. And I think we have to balance these things. Let's assume that there's still a world for capital allocators in 5 years, 10 and 20. And I think there probably will be.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason for that is because somebody has to figure out where to place resource bets.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I'm curious for your perspective on this, not just like, you know, why it excites you, but why does it excite you that you can do it well? What is it about this job where you're like, that is the role I should be in my place to figure out in my life?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the worst job, except for all the others, in my opinion, right? To paraphrase Churchill, but
yeah,
you know, if there was something else that I liked more, I'd be doing it, right? And that's to say, you know, for me, it's surfing the edge of what's possible, that chaos, that wave of technology, it's never a dull moment. There's always some new unlock, some new business model, some new market, new technology. You know, really every 5 years now, and those timelines are compressing, right?
So what do you look for? You're reviewing decks, you're tracking what's happening online, you're getting pitched left and right. What do you look for that sparks the follow-up, that sparks the, lean in, I need to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at 500 or 600 a month. We ask some really basic questions that are kind of checkboxes before we take a meeting, you know. How are your revenues trending? You know, like we look for kind of inflection points where things are going up and to the right. Definitely maybe don't have PMF, product market fit, but you have a product market that has momentum, right? You're an amazing team, right? That is going to be able to build a $1 billion business, right? This is a long-term game. So you have a good why for that as well. So you always ask like, why are you building the business? You know, because anybody talented enough to build a $1 billion company can also just go make a 7-figure income at some big tech company, right? So typically they have some sort of need to like build something. They just see a need in the market and they got to scratch that itch, which in my heart of hearts, I know that's why I shut down my 2 startups is I just didn't have the crazy passion to work, you know, 80-hour weeks to make it a reality. So you're kind of looking for that passion, you know, the right timing, right? Like we talked about. Good unit economics, a great business model. That's usually the case with B2B SaaS. Great vision, right? Where do you see this company in 10 to 20 years?
Yeah.
Right? That's a really good one.
Well, and that's subjective, right? Like that's you pattern matching to a little bit of your own optimism about the future, but also what your intuition is telling you, I have to imagine.
Yeah, it all comes down to vision, right? I mean, you look at, I've been listening to the Musk biography by Isaacson, really good, in the car as I drive up to the mountain back to go snowboarding. And my kids even like it, which is really great. But he has this grand vision of this taking the human race to Mars, right? What a grand vision.
Yeah.
Making us.
It's inspirational.
Multiplanetary. Yeah. And that's such a huge, and it just drives everything he does. And so you kind of look for that in founders. Like, what is that crazy vision that you have for the world and how you're going to change it?
And how much of an art is this versus science when you really choose where to place your ducats?
It's actually inversely correlated with the stage. What I mean by that is early stage is much more an art.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at some numbers and some financials, and there's a little bit, you are investing in lines, as they say, not dots. And so I'm looking for a product to market with momentum, some sort of sustainable moat, economies of scale, et cetera, et cetera. You kind of are looking for that. Oh, like you burnt 500K to get to a million of AR. That's pretty good. Oh, you burnt a million to get to 200. That's not very good. so you're kind of looking at it, depending on it, like in B2B SaaS, it's the barriers to creation have dropped so dramatically. You know, Andreessen said, software's eating the world. Now, of course, AI is eating software. And I'm running into companies now that have a million of revenue and no employees, just a couple of co-founders.
Yeah. You can have your entire back office stack set up in about 20 minutes these days.
Yeah. And I think about that as, you know, running a venture firm. Do I really need to hire anybody? Or can I just use especially finely tuned AI based on all the things that I've done? You know, I have 110 deal memos. Here's all the stuff that I've done. Here's the stuff that I learned that doesn't work. Solo founders and consumer, by the way. And
not to discourage, you know, but, you know, take the lesson.
Yeah, not to discourage, but yeah, that is tough. Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I think this art is really interesting. So many of the conversations on this podcast, we get into, you know, what does it take to drive change in the world? How do you know if you're doing the right change? And we talk about data-driven decision. We talk about customer discovery, and we talk about, you know, connection point to trends in the ecosystem and all that. But I really do, I don't know, for me, especially at the early stage, the, you know, is it worthwhile to pursue this vision? I also think that there is an art, and you do have to look for something that just sort of speaks to your view of what you want the world to look like to an extent.
Yeah, I call this the easy yes, easy no.
Yeah.
You know, I look at 500 or 600 things a month, and I'm only investing in two. So it's got to be an easy yes, right? It's got to be like, look at it and you're like, yep, this is all checking out. This has a good shot of being a billion-dollar company.
Yeah.
And also, like, my philosophy is a higher volume, right? So I think if I reach a portfolio of 100 investments, it minimizes my chances of loss. And because it's so asymmetrical in early stage venture, like I could get lucky and put 25K into the next Google and it's worth $10 billion, 400,000x, right? So like that's the way I think about early stage. There's a certain strategy that's optimal for every stage and sector and geography. And for B2B SaaS worldwide, I think I have the right strategy, but time will tell.
Time will tell. Well, how many easy no's? You said 500 a month. How many of those are easy no's?
I'd say easy, like you glance at them and they're just easy no's. It's probably 250. It's probably half. And then there's the, gosh, I don't know. Like, you know, I meet with, I call it 100 founders. So those are the ones that are like maybes. And then out of the 100 you meet, you probably start due diligence with 20, 15 or 20, and then you invest in two. And so like, I'd say the hard no's are anything you start due diligence on.
Yeah.
Right. Because now you're kind of digging in and you're trying to look for reasons to say yes or no.
You've got some sunk cost in there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little, sunk cost bias.
You've invested emotionally.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's real tough. For those founders that are out there raising, you know, one of the things that we always talk about is, look, like you are going to get a lot of no's and that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
What's the best advice?
One founder said it was like 99 to one.
Yeah, that's about right, I think. Especially over the last year, I think that seems to be about right.
Yeah.
And it goes for those of us who are raising funds from LPs, it seems to go that way as well. So what's the best piece of advice that you can give for a founder who's gotten a bunch of those no's?
I just keep going, right? Find the yes. If you really believe in what you're doing, you'll find people who also, you can find believers or convince people. You just keep going, right? You know, similar with, you know, running a fund or raising money for a fund or raising syndicates, right? I started this game as a syndicate lead, and lots of syndicates failed that I had high conviction in. You know, if you just failed to raise the money,
just keep going.
You just keep going.
I like it. Just keep going.
Just keep going.
I love it. That's perpetual it. Motion machine. Well, Brian, this has been really fun to catch up. For listeners who want to keep in touch, who want to follow what you're up to, where's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, which we'll, I guess we'll put in the show notes. That's, I'm probably most active there.
Absolutely.
BB at LinkedIn, I think, is my handle. And teamignite.vc is the website. Yeah, look us up. Come join us on our mission to ignite startups.
Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you so much. Wish you best of luck on this mission. It was really good to catch up and have a conversation today.
Likewise, Ian. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.